thank you for joining us on Following the Way, a podcast about following Jesus, being shaped by His way, and learning to live freely and faithfully.
Hey, welcome back to Following the Way podcast. This is episode number 2, and today we are drawing a line in the sand, not politically, not culturally, but spiritually, because every single day, whether we realize it or not, we are being formed. You're becoming someone. You're being formed by something, be it headlines or algorithms, outrage, affirmation. Maybe we're formed by what we scroll past our thumbs at 11:30 at night when we told ourselves we're going to bed 45 minutes ago. Nobody else, just me? Okay. Hey, we're formed by what you consume, what you celebrate, what you fear. The question is not, are you being formed? The question is, what are you being formed by? Because formation is inevitable. The drift is real, and culture is forming us every single day. You don't have to sign up for it or agree with it. You just have to absorb it. And in the middle of all the noise, Jesus makes this staggering claim, I am the way. Not vibe, not a hype, not preference, not a help-self strategy, not a political tribe, not the cultural current that you blend into in the moment. Jesus said, I am the way, a path, a pattern, a person to apprentice under. As we've said last week, John Mark Comer said, we are apprentice of Jesus. And so here's the reality that we have to wrestle with. The way of Jesus will always run against the current culture of the world. It always has. The world says promote yourself. Jesus says deny yourself. The world says build your platform. Jesus says take up your cross. The world says curate your image. Jesus says to cleanse your heart. This isn't dramatic rebellion. It's a daily resistance, the quiet tug of war that happens in your heart when you react instead of pray, when you post instead of pause, talking to myself here, when you win instead of love. It's kingdom versus culture. It's formation versus deformation. It's apprenticeship versus algorithm. And so today we're going to take a look down the road long enough to ask the hard question, are we following the way or are we just reacting to the world? Because you can know Christian language and still be formed by secular rhythms. We're not here for hype or hot takes. We're here for formation. Today's episode is called The Way or the World. And of course, I'm not walking this out alone. I've got my brothers here with me, James Bell and Chris Gepner. Fellas, welcome back to episode number 2 of Following the Way podcast. How are you doing?
Living the dream. How about you, James? Cold up there in Michigan as it is here in Vermont?
Always. We hit above 30 this week, so I got out the shorts this week.
Shorts and flip-flops. I thought of you Sunday, James. We had a warm-up here, and it was a couple weeks ago. I think we hit 30, and I was like, this is a Michigan warm-up, as my buddy James Bell would say.
Yeah.
Chris, you said it's, what, 5 degrees there this morning?
Yeah. So if you're listening to this in the future, this is in February in Vermont. And February in Vermont is like a freezer box that just never stops. And March is the biggest deception. Because we're like a couple of days from Vermont, from March in Vermont, and it just gets colder. It's really hard. So that's why my Florida breaks are really, really important right now.
Yeah. I don't understand that cold. Like, I don't think I've ever felt 5 degrees.
It's brutal, man. Yeah. No bueno.
Well, thankfully, we're close enough to your Florida breaks that it's like 65 outside right now. So
it's not bad.
Well, as we're talking today about the way versus the world. And I just want to kick this off. We got a couple talking points here, but we're going to talk about this idea that we're being formed, whether we like it or not. And I'd love for us to break down Romans 12:2, kind of what that means to you. Do not be conformed. You know, that word conformed is talking about being pressed into a mold. Where does that verse hit y'all this morning?
I think with me, the press, there's three different Greek words that talk about conformed, pressed, and one I think that Paul uses in Romans 12 is the differentiation between the internal and the external, and the schema, and then the metamorphosis, the internal versus the external. And I think a lot of times we focus a lot like the whitewashed tombs of the Pharisees. We focus on what I need to do. And Paul in Galatians uses the term embryo when he talks about, I think it's in Galatians 2, where he talks about the verses, the basically he, I think it's in Galatians 2 or Galatians 4, where he talks about childbirth and child pains. And he basically uses this embryo, this term that doctors would use as embryo. And for me, like when I look at Romans 12 and Galatians, a lot of the Pauline writings, formation is really about the nature that you put it in. The environment is what you put it in. And it's not so much don't do this or do this or, you know, five steps to spiritual growth. Like those are fine. But it's a much more about the environment that the embryo of Christ grows within us naturally. And we just have to put it in its proper environment. And I love that framework that you see in the New Testament.
Yeah.
No, I actually wrote a book called Made Right and Rescued, and I have a whole chapter dedicated to this. And it's really more about, for me, it was like, what does it look like to be transformed? Like, what is the outcome of that? And Paul gets there at the end of Romans 12, and I call it the art of neighboring. Because you imagine if we get it, if we literally are in that white flag space, surrender, okay, Lord, I'm yours. Do what you want to do. That transformation begins to happen. And what happens is we become great neighbors. Isn't that like the ultimate goal? Like we're supposed to be his ambassadors and representation here on earth. Isn't that the whole goal of following the way? It's like we want to follow his way, do what Jesus did, live out. He lived. Obviously, we'll never be perfect at it, but he gives us kind of the whole, the framework right here in Romans chapter 12. And it's a transformation. And that art of neighboring is just really, really, I think, the goal for us is we want to be the best neighbors possible, whether it's proximity at home, whether it's proximity in our schools, whether it's proximity in our neighborhoods, or in our, you know, when we're on our local road that really has, you know, bad traffic. And that's my space where I really struggle with my sin nature. I mean, I'm a Florida man, so it's baked within me to have road rage. So, but the art of neighboring is really it's like being the best neighbors possible is really what this whole idea of being transformed is all about.
So obviously we're being transformed. We're being formed by something. I'm interested. What's your thoughts on social media and followers of the way? Like how has social media shaped how Christians react to good, bad, negative, positive? How has social media, how have y'all seen as pastors, social media shaping how Christians react?
I think we live in such a hostile culture. I tell our church, I travel a lot and I teach in seminaries in Thailand. And I say, when I walk into the United States and I can, if I would know that we're in the States just by the temperature of the culture, like you can just sense the hostility. I mean, and it's an amazing thing when you go from an individualistic culture like America to a communal culture and then back, this difference that you don't even recognize that it's actually happening to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the word in Romans 12 where it talks about the being conformed. It's a passive voice, meaning it's something that's happening to you and you don't even recognize that it's happening. Right. It's basically like Jell-O, you know, you're pouring the liquid into Jell-O, but then the mold that it's in shapes it. And I think that's where we get a lot of we struggle, especially like even in Bible interpretation. You look at the different ways that we interpret the Bible across the world. We interpret the Bible culturally, whether it's rural or whether it's urban or you know different like north, south, east, west. I mean, churches are different, but people are different as well, and we don't recognize how much our culture is just naturally shaping us. And it's normal to us, so we don't even recognize it. And I think that's what Paul really is trying to frame in Romans 12, this schemazo of the world. It's basically this form or this mold that's shaping you without you even noticing it. And that's what social media, I think, it just multiplies that. It's the constant barrage. And I'm heavily on social media, and so it's a realm that I'm aware of. But I think it's, you know, I try to enter spaces. This last week, I wrote a couple articles that were pretty. I think I wrote one that was when God Bless America replaces Thy Kingdom Come. And I'm literally received like threats. Like people were that upset And I thought it was a pretty balanced article. I'm like, I'm getting death threats. I'm like, you know, this is the culture and the hostility that is shaping people. And we don't even recognize how it's affecting. And I think that goes back to the embryo that there's not, you know, the discipleship crisis we have in America is because we don't have the environment for the embryo of Christ to be shaped in us because of all the external pressure that's shaping it. We're not creating those environments in our own life, those places where the life of Christ can naturally grow within us and we can grow up into the maturity to be good neighbors. But the external hostility, I think, is shaping us and we don't even know it.
Do you feel like, James, that let's go back a few years when social media it was almost like a new thing people were engaging in. And it was almost like, okay, I can be authentic, but I want to tame it. It seems now that it's almost like, actually, that's where I can be untamed. And it's almost like an alter ego of angst and opinion. And then you get around them face to face and they're like, hey, brother, but on social, they're like,
yes.
And it's like, it's almost like social media has become this spacer where many can become the angry pulpit. And let's just even pull back out of ministry. Let's just go your general population, people who aren't serving full-time ministry, not as pastors, just laity. It's their place where they can voice their opinion. And it's almost like an alter ego to that. And that's going to have long-term effect emotionally, mentally, spiritually. You're not going to grow. I've seen it. Like, I have people in our church who are social media influencers or whatever, right? And you'll see their stuff online. You're like, they're kind of like, it's like an act. And then you see them in person and they're like, hey, how you doing? And it's weird. That will have a long-term effect on them. And we're talking about formation. Like, how are you ever going to grow?
Yeah.
If you're not consistently who you are, like, so there's a whole lot of dynamics here. It's like, really, really, it's going to be a social, like a scientific, study on the effects of this almost like alter egos that we create in our social spaces. And they're like different, like you're different on Facebook than you are on Instagram. And then there's the TikTok world that I had no idea about. My kids know about. Anyway,
there's the Twitter world, and that's a whole nother level of correct.
I deleted my Twitter because I'm like, I don't even know what's real anymore. Like, all the news, it's literally people can just make something up, and people are like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Can you believe that the president is really an alien?
Oh my. He has 17 toes. Did you know that?
He's got 17 toes.
Yeah. He's a robot. Oh man, that's what they're all on right now is there's some reptilian that was at the State of the Union and they caught her eyes going into reptilian mode at the State of the It's crazy. I fell in that hole last night. Like, I think, Chris, you're hitting on something here, like brand Christianity versus apprenticeship to Jesus. Like, we have this, like, it's not that it's sexy, but it's this, like, it's appealing to, you can create a online aura about who you are. And there are some people that just based off what you post, what you share, what you like, you're creating a brand. And it's this brand of, this is who I follow because of who you retweet, who you share, who you like. But then when they meet you, you're something totally different. I mean, I've had people that I'll run into that know me just from the podcast or just from social media. And they're like, oh, you're actually the same person online as you are in person. I'm like, that's the goal. You know, what are your thoughts on this brand Christianity versus apprenticeship to Jesus? What are y'all thoughts around that?
Well, I think that at the end of the day, it's part of our culture. And it's almost like people are, that's what you're aiming towards. This is just Chris being really authentic. Yeah. I have a lot of friends who are pastors that you would probably see. They have reels of little snippets from their messages going around. And that they do that in our own church with me, right?
I do it.
And there's something about it that can easily, you can get sucked into that you're only focusing in on that. Like, okay, what is going to be my little snippet this week? And it's like, no, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. That's not why you're doing this. That's not why you're doing this. And I think some people can easily be drawn into that. So let's pull away from pastoral ministry and just go to laity. You know, Joe, I drove a forklift for 10 years before I was a pastor. I call it my really important seminary years at Costco wholesale driving forklift. And let's just think Joe, who drives a forklift, he's probably not thinking about his snippets. He's probably not thinking about this. But what is that space in his life that is being kind of divided, where he's not able to be who God created him to be? How he, like we're reading right here in Romans chapter 12, like he's not allowing God to transform. What is that? Is the distraction that's pulling him away? It's probably not social media. That's maybe a lot of our space, but Joe, the forklift driver, that's probably like, okay, I probably need a second job. I got to provide for my family. So there's a lot of areas that are distractions that maybe aren't the social space, because a lot of times that's this world we're in. So I think about Joe, the forklift driver, and he might be listening right now, is what is the distraction that is pulling Joe away from really being transformed to be who, uh-huh. you know, to follow the way, to be who Jesus is intended for him to be, the best forklift driver possible, the best husband possible, the best, you know, follower of Jesus in his neighborhood, so that he can be that holistic neighbor who's pointing people to Jesus. So I think, something I thought was really important that we highlight, because I think we can just, that social space is real.
Yeah.
But I don't know if everybody, maybe our listeners, there's a lot of other things that we could identify that
sure.
are really, this is a very distracted world. I've been reading old biographies. So like I was reading Edwards' biography, and if you can trudge through some of that, you know, but you know, he had distractions, man, when he was young, you know, but they were different than us, and it caused him to veer off in his faith. And he talks about that in this biography that I'm reading. And it's like, we all have them, and we got to identify them. And when we identify them, it's like, okay, how can we rightly align so that we are being transformed?
I think with social media and the culture that we live in, especially with just our world, I find it easy for the pastor world and the regular person. And I don't even like to say that because I feel like a regular person, but our world, it's easy to disconnect. But with social media, I think it gives a sense of divinity to humanity, because it gives us a sense of omniscience that I don't think we're meant to carry. Because when in the history of the world do you have the world news and all of the wars and all of the suffering and all the sickness and all of the politics and all of the geopolitical stuff and all the, you know, I mean, Twitter was an example, but I mean, you turn on any sense of social media and you get this sense of omniscience of what's going on in the world, what's going on with your neighbor, what's going on in politics and several different news sources. I don't think that we're meant to carry that load. I think that's a load that is really divine, and we're trying to carry it as humanity. And I think it ties directly into a lot of the mental health crisis that we see in our culture. But also I think it ties into from an experience level, on my personal experience level, I see so much of, like, especially men that lose their focus by getting caught up with like politics, or, you know, you can get into conspiracy theories, and these guys will spend hours at home, you know, searching the internet and going down Twitter rabbit trails, but they forget to love their wife. They forget to disciple their kids. But I mean, and it's an issue. And because it gives us this addiction to this sense of omniscience. And the other flip side of that danger is, I think social media gives platforms to people that don't earn it. So I was talking to my mentor, he's in his 80s, and he said that to me, and it stuck with me. He goes, you know, when I was pastoring, if you had a platform, there was probably a reason that you had a platform, is because you were balanced or you were wealthy. Mm. He goes, social media just gives a platform to anyone that wants to just open their mouth and say whatever. And there's no truth. What is truth? And he says, there's so much outrage and there's so much lies and AI and, you know, curated videos and pictures. He goes, you don't even know what's real anymore. And I thought that was an interesting thought. He says, social media has given a platform to people that haven't earned it. And I thought an interesting take.
That's really good.
Yeah. That's like,
hey, JC, listen.
Go ahead.
Real quick, I got to say this. I have a friend, this is what you're just talking about. I have a friend who is, he's on social. You've probably seen his reels, all this stuff, right? And he told, this was like a year and a half ago. He's like, bro, I'm getting ready to go big on social. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, how is, he's like, oh, I got a social media coordinator. He basically paid somebody to get his stuff out there. So that's a whole other wrinkle in this, right, James?
Yeah.
So, you know, as your mentor was saying, you earned it. It's like, well, now you buy it.
Yeah.
It's so weird, man.
It's,
I'm like,
true.
What? Yeah.
I think you hit the nail on the head, distraction. And I think a lot of times Satan doesn't necessarily make things look evil. He makes us distracted. And I think if we're distracted, be it flat earth, aliens, you know, conspiracy theories. I have a friend who just passed away. He was 92 years old. And I told him, I said, man, I remember we were having a conversation over lunch. I said, I wish I pastored back when you were my age. And he reached across the table and slapped my face. I was like, what? He goes, dude, are you a fool? I said, no. He said, listen, because we were also talking about sexual purity and lust. And I told him, I was like, man, I also said, I can't wait until I'm your age and just to be able to preach and read the word and go. He's like, I have what you have, buddy. I still struggle. Like, I still struggle with lust. I'm like, I didn't want to think about that, you know. But he also said, back in my day, we had distractions just like you did, except they're totally different than what you have now. Mm. He said, y'all are more connected but disconnected than you've ever been. He said, there's so much buying for your attention now, it's just louder. It's not that it's different, it's louder. And if you could think back, I mean, back when I first started, you know, driving, I had a pager, you know, and I would look at that pager all the time, and I would stick a quarter in the payphone just to page myself, just to hear my pager go off, you know. And then it moved up to cell phones, and now it's social media. And, you know, I mean, there's times where we are addicted to this, like, we're addicted to information. We're addicted to wanting to know what's more. And, you know, James, I think you hit the nail on the head. I was talking to some guys just the other day, and they're so entrenched in conspiracy theories and figuring out what is like the real meaning behind it all, that anything being formed by Jesus is kind of getting pushed out just by, it's not that it's bad stuff. It's just making us distracted. And I think when that distraction comes in, it pushes us further away from what the calling that we are as followers of Jesus supposed to be.
The early church, actually, the conspiracy was an early form of Gnosticism, like that it was this pursuit of special knowledge. And that's a good study. If you ever want to go to, I won't go into that. Maybe we can do an episode on conspiracy theories. I don't know. But it's a form of Gnosticism because you're seeking after this special knowledge. It's super interesting. I think
how many people have you talked to this season, men especially, who have a question about that? We were talking offline, James, about, I had a young man come in my office yesterday, and he just had a list of questions, and that was one of them. Like, how do you know what's real and what's not?
Yeah,
you know. And I think you're spot on, James. Like, we can build our whole construct. Our whole formation can be built off of those things. And I think we even see almost like a micro industry, ministry industry of people who are feeding on that, making money off of that and using that. And it's a diversion away from really growing up in your faith.
Yeah.
It's a good point. Yeah, it's good.
And I think some of this behind this is affirmation. Like a lot of these people that are pushing things, a lot of these people that are online, your friend that's hired a company to make him go viral as an influencer. You know, I mean, my son, we were having a conversation, and he's like, Dad, I don't know if I'm going to college. He's like, some of my friends have talking about just becoming influencers and like that being their life career, you know? We'll sit here and watch people do cologne on TikTok. They'll do cologne ads and they're making money off that, but they're cologne influencers. And it's like, anything that you feel like you think you know about, you can just talk about. But I think it all comes down to affirmation. I mean, I'm interested, guys, what's your thought process between how do we help people detangle from their identity from this affirmation-based ideology? Like, we have to continue to follow the way of the world for affirmation for who we are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, honestly, man, If we in a single iota move away from the gospel, it's the gospel grounds us all, right? Meaning the problem and the solution and how we respond. And so, like, that's how Billy Graham frames the gospel. Is like, there's a problem, there's a solution, and how do we respond? And I think pastors, leaders, believers, we always should be grounded by the gospel. That'll pull you back to the main thing, I believe. And that's what I try to do with our church. I always, you know, one of the things I do consistently is always bring it back to the gospel. Man, that'll humble you fast, won't it? And that'll bring you back to the main thing. I know that seems like a simple, answer, but I do believe power of the gospel does that. And last week or 2 weeks ago, we had a communion time, and we've really tried hard in our church context to eliminate the formality of communion, because it's become this religious genuflect. Yeah. Like, this is what we do. It's like, No, that's not what Jesus said. Remember me, man. And I think for me personally, it was like a really grounding moment in my own walk, because I was just sharing with you, like, the temptation, like, all my friends are, they have their reels. Like, why am I doing that? I need to do that. It's like, no, don't worry about that. Remember the problem of sin, death, hell. Remember the solution that Jesus lived, died, resurrected. And remember that we get to respond to that and surrender and a life lived for him, that, and to be formed in him. And it's a day-to-day walk. Man, that kind of messed me up in my own kind of formation that day. It was 2 weeks ago, and it was very profound for me. So I'd say the gospel's a big part of that.
I think when I look at Romans 12, the difference is the conformed and the transformed, and the difference between those two words. Being conformed to this world is the things that we exist in. It's our culture. It's our rhythms of our life. It's the social media. It's the sports. It's the church. It's the busyness. It's the chaos in our culture. And I think a lot of people, we stick in that realm of discipleship of, that's where cultural Christianity exists. It's in the conformity of the world. And I'm not saying like, oh, you're worldly, but in the essence that we don't go deeper. And I talked about this, the difference between activity and intimacy. And I think we have allowed especially in our Americanized churches, we have allowed the activity to become intimacy. And we have traded the activity with the maturing of Christ. But I think a lot of it is cultural Christianity. It's that conformity. We have created a Christianity that is acceptable culturally, so people assume that they're Christian and they're Christ-like because they go to church and they wear the t-shirt and they go to this conference and they go to small group. And I mean, those are all good things. None of this is bad things. And I tell all of our church to do that. But I always tell it's much deeper than that, because it's so much the spiritual formation is the embryo of Christ having an environment that is maturing within you. And that is that transformation. It's the difference between external conformity than internal transformation. And I think that's the great danger that I see with formation, is we allow people to just exist in this external cultural Christianity without encouraging this deep spiritual formation. Because it's not, like I tell young men all the time, maturing in your faith is not something that you do. It is something that grows within you. When you are made alive in Christ, that embryo of Christ is now within you. Now it just needs to be nurtured. It needs to be fed. It needs to be given the proper environment. And that grows naturally. But the external of the world, the conformity of the world, is going to be pulling you away and allowing you to not fixate upon that environment where the Christ can grow within you, you know? And so I think a lot of these guys are looking kind of like at it like a stoic, you know, like, I need to do this and I need to do that. And because I do X, Y, and Z, then I'll overcome sin. And I'm like, it's not so much of what you do, but who you are and who you're becoming. And I think that's a big thing, is we have allowed cultural Christianity to kind of take that away. And it's not so much what we do, but it's who we are and what we're becoming.
That's interesting. Have you guys picked up on this? You just made a really good statement, James, not what you do. And that religious activity. Have you picked up on this with a lot of young men, curious about orthodoxy, curious about Catholicism, like tons of curiosity that, like, why don't we do Lent? As it's not that we don't, it's just like we just never, it's not really part of our tradition, but we do Lent every day. We remember Jesus and we daily sacrifice. And so, but I was thinking about it, I was like, that's actually really interesting. So how this can bleed into performance-based growth.
Yeah. You know, I think, I mean? It goes, like, back a lot of times, it goes back to, you know, the conversations that we have with here in the South, people basing their salvation off the day they were baptized, because it's the tangible. It's the thing they can touch. They can look back to the day and be like, well, that's the day I got into the water. Yes, granted, there's some bad discipleship in there and theology and that, but I think what you're hitting on, Chris, is like touching those things, being able to do those and act those out in ritualistic It lets us hold on to something tangible instead of where our faith is growing. And, you know, faith is believing in things that we can't see. But instead of that, we put it in trinkets and in ordinances and in actions that we're following. And it's almost just like, well, I felt the water, so I'm baptized. No, that's the outward sign of the inward change that happened. And that's been some of the conversation around what you just talked about that I've had, Chris.
And so it's really more about that day-to-day surrender.
Yeah.
That's where this transformation comes. And I appreciate what you said, James, in that those tangible action-based pieces, mm-hmm. that it can flush out in a variety of ways in all of us, right? That's good. That's really thoughtful.
I think it's daily because it's not dramatic. Yeah. It's not overwhelming. You're not going to see results in one day. It's that continual. Who was it? Eugene Peterson said it's long obedience in the same direction. It's that daily dependence. The way, following the way, is not loud. It's consistent. Right. It's small, obedient steps.
Yeah. And I also think, like, us as pastors, especially evangelical Protestant pastors, I've started talking to Orthodox pastors because we're having a lot of crossover, especially with young men. And I've been pretty interested in that. And their view on Protestant evangelical pastors, he goes, you guys are all about mission and to the neglect of almost transformation, where they focus more on the inward renewing with creeds and with readings and with, you know, and meditations and prayers, and they focus more on the inward without so much gospel evangelism. And we were talking about the difference and the emphasis is that we focus on. And sometimes I wonder if to the neglect of inward transformation, we have stepped into more of an extreme in evangelization, and to an extreme in the sense that I don't believe that we should ever stop preaching the gospel. Don't take me wrong here, but I think we have, I've been guilty of this mission. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of created this vacuum of, oh man, there's a discipleship crisis. And these young people are seeing, man, there's a lot of mission, people being saved, baptized, but man, that's kind of shallow in a lot of areas as well. I'm seeking something that's deeper. And I think there's this kind of this pulling back. That's not that we lose sight of the mission, but man, that mission is not just get people to make a decision, but it's to see Christ formed in them. And I think that we have to, as Protestant evangelical pastors, we have to take the mission even further. It's not just, you know, hey, you're saved. No, we need to teach you all things. We need to see Christ formed in you. And that is really the gospel mission.
Yeah, I would, James. So your conversation with the Orthodox priest, what did that feel like in regards to your pursuit of understanding? Did it feel like he was in defense, or was he interested as well?
No, I have a good relationship with him, and I think it was because we're trying to understand each other. So I think in America we've kind of adopted the culture of individualism, and we're hyper separatists, even if we're,
that's why we have denominations.
And I think there's this movement, I don't know if it's even a movement that would be visible, but more of an undercurrent, where I think at least as pastors, we're trying to understand each other, and we're realizing, like, when we actually sit down for coffee, the things that that separate us aren't really things that are that different. It's a lot of our semantics and nuances. And there are some things that would be doctrinal, but I think what we realize is that we're a lot more alike than we're different. And the things that we're separating over are different emphases. And not in all, obviously, this is a super nuanced, I mean, that's a super broad brush, okay? That's a very nuanced conversation, but it's fascinating to me. Like, you know, I was kind of, you know, I think the thing is like, in denominations, as we were brought up, we're like, you know, those guys don't have the truth quite like we have the truth, you know, and that's kind of like just kind of ingrained in us. But when you actually sit across the coffee table and you realize, man, that's a brother that loves the Lord and is seeking after Christ, and maybe it's in a different way than us, it's kind of a mind shift. So I don't know if it was I think it was just both of us trying to learn about each other and try to actually understand each other instead of making assumptions about each other.
And I think y'all probably deal with that opportunity more than we do here in the South, you know, because here in the South, it's our way or the highway kind of thing. I mean, it's Bible Belt Baptist, it's Methodist, it, and everybody keeps to their own denomination. It's why I'm non-denom, because I still can't find denominations in the Bible, but that's a different episode. But when I lived out in Salt Lake City, I mean, finding somebody that loved Jesus in Utah, we would gather the first Tuesday of every month. There was a gathering that we would do at Wingers, and we would eat wings and we would hang out and we'd talk about Jesus. There was a Lutheran there. There was a Presbyterian there. There was me as a Baptist. There was another guy that was there. And the thing was, we didn't necessarily agree on doctrinal things completely, but we loved Jesus, and Jesus was the common denominator. And just to get around somebody that loved Jesus, I was like, man, this is great, because Utah was a whole nother world. And so we would find ourselves doing that. The fact that, thinking about that here in North Georgia, to be seen with a Lutheran, a Methodist, a Presbyterian, and a Baptist, that's a joke that has to happen around here. Do y'all find that more like Vermont, Michigan? Do y'all find that Jesus bonding, or is it keeping to their own camps?
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude. That's one good. Of the things, so moving from Florida, now South Florida is a very unique beast. It's the sixth
borough. It's New York South. Yeah, that's it. I remember you saying that last week.
Yeah. But moving here, I think it's very similar, just kind of connecting with brothers. And what you'll find is my closest relationships are people that are outside of my lane, my tribe, if you will. Because you only have so many. I mean, Vermont is the least evangelical state in America. It's even less than Utah, believe it or not.
That's crazy.
It just is. And that's, I don't see that as a problem. I actually see that as an opportunity.
Sure.
But it's hard when it comes to relationships with co-laborers, you know? So yeah, like James said, you know, connecting with the Orthodox priest. I love that. I've been able to learn a lot from my brothers, maybe some of my Pentecostal brothers.
Yeah.
I appreciate their variety. They have their own spaces of intentional spiritual growth, or their own little things maybe are a little uncomfortable for me, but man, you can learn a lot from each other.
Sure,
and
sure.
I appreciate that. You know, one thing, this week I was at a conference in Florida, and it was so refreshing for me, because the worship was just, it was a pretty borderline Pentecostal worship. But dude, there's something about their heart for the presence of God that in my Baptistic background that we're afraid of, or maybe we don't even know exists, the presence of God. There's a reverence that came with it. There was this awe. I was blown away. So there's so much we can learn from our brothers and sisters who are being formed, right? I see some of my Pentecostal brothers, and yeah, I want to be like them. You know, I want their zeal for the presence of God. And then you have the guy, the Orthodox guy, man, there's something about them. I want their zeal for some of these tangible spiritual exercises that are really helping to form them. So there's things you can learn, but I also just like, sometimes it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think as we kind of talked about the conformity, we always liken it to the world. And I think as we kind of talk about denominations, within our churches, there's cultures that conform us externally.
Sure.
And I think this is a danger that's not often talked about, because we almost encourage it on accident. We would say Christ-likeness looks like us. It looks like this. Mm. And whether that's in Baptist, or whether that's in Pentecostal, or whether it's Lutheran or Orthodox, the thing that we're to pursue, like what is in Corinthians where it says, and with unveiled faces contemplating the Lord's glory, are being transformed, what you'd see, in his image, in his glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Transformation comes from beholding Christ, not from a certain church culture or a certain denominational expectation.
Sure.
Whether I'm Baptist or non-denominational or Presbyterian, we all have the same goal, is to be made into the likeness internally of Christ and brought into his maturity. But I think so much of it is we're conformed, you know, to being a Baptist. And I come from those realms of very conservative, and I don't know what people would call me now. I've seen some of the things they've said about me online, and
flaming liberal.
You're woke.
I think there's an instance where we kind of rob people of Christ's likeness because we want them to shape them into our church culture or on our core values. And I'm like, man, I don't care if you fit into our core values. We try to make a discipleship, an organic discipleship model. I don't want you to just do the core values because we have them there. I want you to behold Christ and be made like him as a father, as a husband, as a wife, as a teenager, as a leader in your community, as a forklift driver. I want you to be like Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you call that, Baptist, Lutheran. And it's dangerous because a lot of times maturity is, you know, being a Baptist or being, you know, fitting into these church cultures that out externally conform us.
That's good. I was having a conversation with the guy after the last episode, and he said, are y'all going to give the plan? I said, the plan? He said, to follow the way of Jesus. Like, what's the formation? What's the plan for formation? I was like, that, but what you just said, James, hits the nail on the head, is it's not, there's no plan. It's right, following right. Jesus. And, you know, the whole goal of this podcast is going to be to help us discover that following Jesus is a daily dependence. It's a growth process. It's not just a pigeonhole into one ideology and running with that. It's a lifestyle. It's a following him. And, you know, this sets up with something that we're going to be talking about in March, the unhurried way. Because I think sometimes what we do is we want results. We want to follow, we want results. And that goes in with what we've talked about with this culture of social media right here, right now. Google it, ChatGPT it, we got it, it's here. But the unhurried way is following the way of Jesus, because hurry, it kills depth, because you're just, we got a lot of followers of Jesus that are a mile wide and an inch deep. You know, they're trying to build their skyscraper type religion on a foundation that's as shallow as a chicken coop. So there's nothing to grow on. The noise, which we're surrounded by it at all times, good, bad, indifferent, but that kills discernment at times with, is this the Spirit or is this, you know, my wants, my desires. And then I think speed kills information because we get it so quick. And so March, we're going to talk about the unhurried way.
Yeah. You know, one of my mentors says this, what value is there in mentors, by the way? Gosh, like older season.
Yeah.
My one mentor, he's 82, and he has my ear with these words. He says, Chris, you've got to be routinely faithful. Just be routinely faithful. And I ask him, what does that mean? And what does that look like for you? And it looks like your everyday surrender to the Word of God, making him a priority, setting your day. So when someone asks, like, what is the formula? It's like, well, it's not really a formula. It's a way. It's a daily rhythm of routine faithfulness. And he says this to me. He says, Chris, I like the word routinely faithful because sometimes you just got to do it. Sometimes you just got to do it, even though it's like, I've been reading through First Thessalonians, and we've read through it 1,000 times, right? And it's like routine. I just got to read through it. But you know what's funny? When you're committed to that routinely faithful, it's almost like God rewards that. You know, it is like he rewards that routine faithfulness. So those words have been really good for me, that language of routine faithfulness. And I've plastered everywhere, and it's a reminder to me because sometimes the distractions and all this stuff, I've got to just kind of hone in, remove the distractions, just be routinely faithful. And one of the big parts of that is he tells me, he's like, that prayer life, man, you've got to dial in your prayer life. Again, something we've done is I don't have digital Bible. I removed that. The way I'm routinely faithful is saying, you know what? I got my Bible. I got a highlighter. I got a pencil. And I had somebody come to me this week, like, how can I grow in my faith? And I was like, well, how do you have your time with the Lord? They're like, well, I do the Bible app. I was like, can you do me a favor? Delete the app, and I'm going to give you a Bible. And I gave him one. We always have them here, like really nice Bibles. And I said, take this and just be routinely faithful to God's word, no matter what, day in, day out. Stay off the app Not that there's anything wrong with that. We love Life Church and the Bible app, right? I'm not disparaging that. I'm not saying get rid of, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying sometimes you got to get rid of it so you can build routine faithfulness rhythms in your life. So over, like you said, Eugene Peterson, it's that long obedience in the same direction. It's the same idea. It's just day by day by day. I bet that Orthodox priest has some really powerful routine faithfulness things that he has built in that we can learn from. There's some depth in here, man. We're talking about, you know, going outside of our lane and learning, but also learning from the people that God has placed in front of us with our mentors. Pretty cool.
I read a book years ago by Brother Lawrence, who was a monk. He wrote a book called Practicing the Presence of Jesus. And in that is this concept of being versus doing. And he's talked about how he just wants to be in the presence of Jesus before doing the presence of Jesus. And I'm telling you, this concept of being versus doing, I suck at being. I mean, there are times where I get in there and I'm like, I'm trying to make the presence of God. Okay, here's my Bible. Here's my music. Here's my journal. Like, let's do this. God, I want to pray. I want to get an answer. And this whole concept, and this has been a journey for the last 13 years of learning how to be. Just be. Just go and sit with no expectation. Just sit in the presence of Jesus. I am addicted to noise. I'm addicted to making things happen. And it's a practice of, you know, I mean, just like I played baseball in high school and college, and I stopped my sophomore year, and I didn't practice and tried to pick it back up my junior year, and I couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. Like, that practice, that routine, you get out of the gym, you know, you don't. And so it's that faith muscle, and doing that is practicing the presence of Jesus. And I think that's where we are so surrounded by all of the external things that look godly that we miss the presence of Jesus by not actually being in his presence. And it's a practice. And I'm 13 years in on it, and I'm still trying to figure out how to just be in his presence. Just sit and listen, not try to make his voice, just listen for his voice. And I don't know who said the quote, but I heard it years ago. It said, live your life every moment to where when the Holy Spirit speaks, you not only hear his voice, but you know who it is speaking. And, you know, that's, you can look back at Elijah. He's not in the dramatic, the wind, the fire, the rain, the thunder. He was in the still small voice, but he whispers because he's close. And so that practice of the unhurried way of being there, is something we all need to strive for.
Yeah. The difference between being and doing, I think it goes back to the separation of those two words in Romans 12 of conformity and transform. Yeah. And I think that being is being conformed and or transformed, and doing is the conformity, because we exist in cultures where it's, I read my Bible, I prayed today, you know, it's checklist. And it's the Colossians, it's kind of like the difference between the Pharisees and, you know, the whitewashed tombs. Basically, I'm not saying like Pharisees, we look at them like, oh, that guy that, you know, super conservative, he's a Pharisee. Phariseeism is really just, it's the duty of following God without the relationship, without the knowledge of God. And I think it's so much more contemplative than we actually do in our Protestant evangelical churches. When I talked to that priest, he says, you know, we spend a majority of our time beholding the glory of God. And I'm like, to my confession, I'm like, and this probably sounds bad. Like, what do you mean by beholding the glory of God? Like,
sure.
No, but let's go preach the gospel on the street corner. Let's go to the jails. Let's go, you know, let's go to the highways and hedges and reach people for Jesus. And he goes, you know, I think that's the difference. You know, that's what we were talking about, is not so much, I think, to our error. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, preaching the gospel, evangelizing, it's good. But man, if it becomes the ultimate where I neglect the beholding of the glory of God, that I am being shaped into his likeness. And so, you know, when you mentioned like steps or, you know, formulas, I say it's what we behold is what forms us. And if I'm not creating environments where I don't want it to be like, you know, delete Instagram or, you know, do all the touch not, taste not stuff. But I mean, like, in my home, am I, as a father, am I first taking time to behold the glory of God in the image of Jesus Christ And is that producing Christ-likeness, growth, fruit in my life? Like, does my wife see love, joy, peace, long-suffering? Is there fruit being made internally, not by what I do, not by the sermons I preach, or how many people are baptized, or how big our church grows, or but am I being shaped into the likeness of Christ internally? And the biggest indicators of that would probably be my wife and kids.
Hey, I got a praise. I don't know if I should have told you all this up at the front. I don't know if you saw social media, but we were down in Florida last week, and my daughter, Lil Red, gave her life to Jesus. She said yes to Jesus. And listen, I don't know about y'all. My kids, I don't want them to have an emotional reaction. I didn't want them to have a preacher's kid faith. She sees these kids getting baptized, and so she started asking questions, and we delayed. Like, we're like, what does it mean? You know, and to the point where she come up after the end of service, she said, Dad, I'm not putting it off anymore. I'm saying yes to Jesus right now. I know I'm a sinner, and I need salvation. I was like, Lil Red, I'm not praying anything for you. You say it. And I'm telling y'all, it was the most genuine, real prayer I've ever heard. And it wasn't cliche or it was so, man, I'm about to run right now thinking about it. But praise the Lord. Well, it's a good episode today. And as we wrap up today's episode, we'll be back in March talking about the unhurried way. And I think this conversation today really set that up well. Because the world forms through pressure. Jesus forms through presence. The world is loud. The way is narrow. The world demands reaction. The way invites surrender. And the world forms consumers while the way forms disciples. And that's the goal of following the way of Jesus, is becoming a disciple, an apprentice, a follower of his. Here's the truth. You cannot drift into Christ-likeness. You won't accidentally wake up one day looking like Jesus. Drift always moves downstream. Formation in Christ always moves upstream. The world will disciple you through repetition, through outrage, through comparison, through fear, through affirmation. And it does it quietly, subtly, not with billboards, not with notifications, not with persecution or distractions. And if we're not intentional, like we've talked about today, we'll wake up in a world foreign to the voice of God. This is why Jesus said the gate is narrow, the way is hard, and few find it. Why? Because it requires a lot of intention. It requires surrender. It requires saying no to what feels normal so you can say yes to what is eternal. Every scroll, it shapes you. Every habit forms you. Every voice speaking into your life influences you. You are becoming someone. The question is, are you becoming more like Jesus? The way is not a trend. It is transformation. It's not always going to feel exciting or visible or is celebrated, but it leads to life, real peace, real joy that doesn't rise and fall with your algorithm or what's going on in society. And so here's the invitation as we wrap up today's episode. Step out of the drift, out of the reaction, out of the formation of what you are being formed by, and choose Christ's presence over performance. Choose obedience over optics. Choose surrender over self-promotion, because it's the way versus the world. Not because the world isn't powerful, but because Jesus is greater. And we're not just trying to survive culture. We're apprenticing under a king, from freedom to formation. We'll see you next month. God bless. Have a great week.